through a deep experience of sorrow. Not much that they want to say. And maybe not much that you want to say either. It's not always essential to talk. And I'm sure that there are folks who are listening to me. And as they've passed through those deep experiences of sorrow, initially, there was not much they wanted to say. But not only have we read about David's sin and thought a little about his sorrow, I want you to think with me about his song. We read a little about it in chapter number 22. And if you wanted to read the comparable section, you would, of course, wouldn't you, go back to Psalm number 18. David's song. And you know, here again in the Bible, we find another song of deliverance. You can go back in your thinking to the earlier books, and you're saying, I can think of songs of deliverance. And you can go further right into the New Testament, into the book of the Revelation, if you like. And you find there as well recorded for us songs of deliverance. My brother, my sister, Old Testament, New Testament, earth, heaven, time, eternity, God's people will always be raising songs of deliverance. Whenever you think about those songs of deliverance, whether past or future, earth or heaven, all those songs of deliverance are addressed to the same person. They're all addressed to the Lord. And the one that we've read a little from this afternoon is no different to that. As David sings this song of deliverance, he's telling us who delivered him. And why he delivered him. And when he delivered him. In fact, as you read 2 Samuel 22, you maybe would write over somewhere in your Bible these words: I am come down to deliver. For the message from the book of Exodus is the message of 2 Samuel 22 and Psalm 18. I'm come down to deliver. Who was it that delivered him? Well, the Bible tells us it was the Lord. From whom? It's interesting that he says, from all my enemies and from Saul. You see, Saul might have seen himself as being opposed to David and as being an enemy of David. But if I read that opening sentence aright, David never felt that way about Saul. Delivered from all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. Why was it that the Lord delivered David? Well, we don't need to guess. He says, he delivered me because he delighted in me. And when was it that he delivered him? Well, it tells us when he called upon the Lord. Dear brother, dear sister, today, I want us to try and understand something of how David felt that day when he raised this song of deliverance. The Lord did it. Did it, as he says further down the chapter, from my strong enemy. Did it because he delighted in me. And did it when I called upon him. I'm sure as you read this chapter or as you read Psalm 18, you come to the conclusion, who else but the Lord could have delivered him? Maybe that's how you feel as well when you go to the book of Jonah and you hear Jonah saying, "Salvations of the Lord!" And you pose the question, who else could have saved him but the Lord? And so, whether it be David in 2 Samuel 22 or Jonah in chapter number 2, they're both saying, my deliverance, my salvation, I owe to the Lord himself. You know, all of these songs that we're thinking about just at this moment were songs that were raised by David. And this song was sung on earth. But there is a song that you and I can sing. A song about deliverance that we've experienced. And if I might just borrow the words from 2 Corinthians 1 and 10. He has delivered. He doth deliver. And he will yet deliver us. Dear brother, dear sister, today, as we think about David's song of deliverance, he's thinking about deliverance from a physical foe. But you and I, when we come to join the innumerable company in the skies, we'll be talking about our deliverance from this evil world and from a greater foe than David was thinking about at this time. He has delivered. He doth deliver, and he will yet deliver us. Now, it's all very well, isn't it, in conference capacity, assuming that everybody listening to me is going to be joining in those eternal doxologies. If you're a believer, if you're trusting Christ, you certainly shall. But I'm wondering today, is it possible that there is somebody with us in the conference today and you don't know the experience that David knew from the miry clay? Your feet now on a rock and he's put a new song in your mouth. I'm really just saying to you today, is everybody present saved and bound for heaven? I sometimes say, when I'm preaching the gospel, you know, in eternity, it's either singing unto him or wailing because of him. It would be good if at the end of the conference, everybody would be able to say, I'm going to be singing unto him. Finally, and I really must be brief on this fourth point and final point, I thought about David's supporters. Maybe you're not too happy with that word, supporters. Well, really, it was a word that seemed to give us an S to alliterate with the ones that had gone before. But you know the folks that I have in mind. I'm thinking about David's final words. And I'm thinking about David and what he had to say about those mighty men. Those people who were on his side. Dear brother, dear sister, if you take time to read 1 Samuel and elsewhere in the Old Testament, you will understand that it was not always easy to be on David's side. But there were others who were on David's side. Not all came at the same time, but eventually he gathered quite an army together. And they were all on David's side. I found it interesting when I read this chapter to note what David has to say about these mighty men. I'm sure that you'll search the Old Testament scriptures in vain to find the occasions when these mighty men did the acts that David attributed to them.
I couldn't turn you today and say, you see that one there? Well, that refers to such and such an occasion. And you know, it's a very simple point. But while others might not have recognized these things, it was sufficient to know that David knew what these people had done for him and with him. I suppose when you think about David's mighty men, you would say they were men who were committed and they were men who were devoted. A great deal has been said in the prayer meeting and in our hymns together, not about David, but about David's greater son. Could I ask us all just to pose a question personally? Would I be devoted? Would I be committed to David's greater son? I think that's what Christian living is all about, you know. It's having that commitment and devotion to the Lord who saves us and to the Lord who's soon coming back for us. You see, these were folks who were devoted and committed to David when he was in rejection. We sometimes sing, "Our Lord is now rejected." Am I devoted? Am I committed to a rejected Lord? But I want to tell you as well that as you read down that chapter, you're conscious that David knows what each person has done. There are, of course, levels of commendation. That's why I read you that verse about Benaiah. Fairly clear from the chapter that in the first level there were three. And in the next level there were three. And in the third level there were the others. Benaiah had more honor than the 30, but he did not attain to the first three. And so what we have in 2 Samuel 23 is an accurate assessment of the contributions that each person made as they were committed to the cause of David. I won't stretch the point, but I would believe that here, as in Romans 16, we could very well have pictures of the judgment seat of Christ. Where David thinks about those mighty men and commends them for what they have done in his cause. Ultimately, dear brother, dear sister, we must look beyond the rapture. And we must remember that we're all going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. When that day dawns, there will be an accurate assessment of me, of you, as a person. Of me, of you, as to our practices. Of me, of you, as to our purposes. And in that day, as we find in 2 Samuel 23, an accurate assessment will be made. And as somebody has well said, if you have done well in that day, you will hear the well done. Now, there's much more that might be said, but time is gone. David's sin, David's sorrow, David's song, David's supporters.
Let's read together, please, verse number 17. The second book of Samuel and chapter number 1 and verse number 17. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Also, he bade them teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher. The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath. Publish it not in the streets of Ascalon. Lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Verse number 25. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished. Over now, please, to chapter number 18. Verse number 33, 2 Samuel chapter number 18 and the last verse. And the king was much moved, and went up to the chamber over the gate, and wept. And as he wept, thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. O Absalom, my son. Over now, please, to chapter 22. Verse number 1. And David spake unto the Lord the words of this song in the day that the Lord had delivered him out of the hand of all his enemies and out of the hand of Saul. To chapter number 23, please. Verse number 1. Now these be the last words of David. David, the son of Jesse, said, and the man who was raised up on high, the anointed of the God of Jacob, and the sweet psalmist of Israel, said, the Spirit of the Lord spake by me, and his word was in my tongue. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spake to me, he that ruleth over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. Now to verse number 8, please. These be the names of the mighty men whom David had. The Tachmonite that sat in the seat, chief among the captains. The same was Adino the Esnite. He lift up his spear against 800 whom he slew at one time. Down to verse number 22, please. These things did Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada. But had the name among the three mighty men. He was more honourable than the 30, but he attained not to the first three. And David set him over his guard. And our final reading in the following chapter, verse number 1, first of all. And again the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go, number Israel and Judah. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, and number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people. Verse number 10. David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly in that I have done. And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. We do trust that God shall bless to us this afternoon these readings from what we believe to be his inspired and his infallible word. I'm sure that we all know that the person about whom we've been reading this afternoon is one of the persons in the Old Testament who is rightly described as a man of God. There would be seven such named in the Old Testament, and we would expect to find amongst them this lovely person whom you and I know as David, the sweet psalmist of Israel. A German writer once posed the question, where is the man who can claim equal fame as musician, as poet, as statesman, as soldier? Now, as you think about these four words that I've raised in your hearing today, well, the German writer says, such a man was David. He believed that David was a person who had fame as a soldier and as a statesman and as a musician and as a poet as well. But this afternoon, as we consider together, very simply, some things that we've gleaned from the story of David, I want you to ask you to think with me solely about how we find David in the second book of Samuel. I remember as a very young Christian, in fact, just after I became a Christian, my favourite books in the Old Testament were the first and second Samuel books. I don't know what it was about these books that appealed to me as a young believer, but I tell you, I read them over and over again and was quite thrilled as I read the stories that were found in these Old Testament books. But as we think about the second book of Samuel today, we know that it's in that book that we're told that for 40 years David was a sovereign. And for 33 and a half of those years, he reigned over both Judah and Israel. And so today, it might be a helpful exercise if we were just to think about him as sovereign today. But as you go through the chapters of 2 Samuel, you find out more about David than that. The Bible reminds us of his sins. That takes us to chapter 11, doesn't it? And also to chapter number 24. The Bible reminds us of his sympathy. And that takes us as well to chapter number 9. The second book of Samuel tells us as well about his successes. And that's reminding us today of chapter number 5. Because three times over in that chapter, we read about David's successes in the battlefield. First of all, his defeat of the Jebusites. And then twice later in the chapter, his defeat of the Philistines. In the chapter as well, in the book as well, we read about his song. And we're going to look at that later as we consider together chapter number 22. And you're not surprised, are you? For two of his references this afternoon have reminded us of the sympathy and the sorrow that was in the heart of David. And before we conclude, if time permits, I want to look with you at chapter number 23 and see in that his supporters, those who were on his side. We obviously will not have time to look at these further 6 points this afternoon. I feel a tremendous burden today as I bring to you the message from the Lord. Not because of the kind of message that I necessarily have, but as I look at a large company, so many assemblies represented, so many younger people and older people too, and to remind my heart of some of the things our dear brethren were saying in their prayers, that there might be first of all a Christ-exalting ministry, but there might as well be for all of us, young or old, brother or sister, something that will meet your need and my need today. It is perhaps true that as time passes, words come more readily to the lips. But I tell you, the burden of ministering God's word to God's people becomes no less, in fact, it seems, to increase with the passing of time. And so we look to the Lord today as we bring to you these meditations on the life story of David. I want us to think first of all about his sins. I don't really intend to say anything on that sin that we read about in chapter number 11. We're all very familiar with that story about David and Bathsheba. But I want to think with you today about David's sin as it's recorded for us in chapter number 24. I suppose when you read chapter number 24, you feel as if the Lord is telling David to do something that's wrong. But maybe if you read the parallel passage in 1 Chronicles chapter number 21 and verse 1, you see that there it's the evil one. Satan himself is trying to operate upon David's thinking and saying to him, David, go and number the people of Israel. We read that verse, didn't we? That David says, I have sinned greatly before the Lord. You know, it's very interesting to note that when he intimated his intentions to number the people, Joab and the other captain said to him, don't do it, David. It's wrong. He had time to reverse his decision, you know. For the numbering took over 9 months, almost 10 months, to carry out his intentions. But never once did David want to withdraw his instructions to number the people. And then the message comes back to him. And it's interesting if you read the parallel passage in 1 Chronicles 21 that Joab really was disobedient because he did not number all the people. He did not number Benjamin and he did not number Levi. So convinced was he that this was wrong that even although David said to him, number all the people, he refused to do it. But the message comes back, David, you're the king over a little over 1 million people. Now some young Christians might read that story and the verse that we've read from chapter number 24 and say this, wherein has David sinned in numbering the people? Is it wrong? Was it wrong? Well, obviously, the context of the section we've read makes it abundantly clear. It was wrong. David ought not to have numbered the people. I suppose when you think about that, and you ask yourself a very simple question, why do you think he wanted it to be done? Could it just be that lurking in the innermost recesses of David's being, there was pride, there was conceit? He's really wanting to know how great David really is. And if the message comes back with that large number of people, maybe David is going to have an inflated impression of himself and of his power. I tell you, dear brother, dear sister, today, we must never have an inflated impression of ourselves. No less a person than the great apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 12 was concerned about that. And he said, lest I be exalted above measure. What happened? The Lord sent to him a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet him. For that, he made the request that it might be removed. His request received the reply from the Lord, my grace is sufficient for you. And to that there was a response from the heart of Paul, most gladly therefore will I glory in my infirmities. You see, the Lord would have us understand that we must have right thoughts about ourselves. But then there's always the possibility, isn't there, that this man who writes so often, and whom we quote so often as trusting in the Lord, is it not just possible that with so much of an army belonging to him, there might just be the odd occasion when he would feel that he could depend upon himself. My dear brother, my dear sister, today, let me say this to you. The Lord would not have you or me either underestimating the enemy or overestimating our own potential. You see, that's why there would be these two stories in the Old Testament. Remember the story of Ai. Remember the story of Gideon. You think of the story of Ai. Yes, I know that there was sin in the camp, and that's why they were defeated the first time they went to Ai. But the second time, they were going to send only 2,000 or 3,000. And the Lord said, no, send up the whole army, because he would not want them to underestimate the enemy that was against them. But then in the story of Gideon, there was initially an army of 32,000, which was by those tests, as you know, reduced to a number 300. And so the Lord seems to be reversing the process, because he wants to teach them a lesson that on this occasion they will not be depending upon themselves with an army of 300. They'll be depending solely on the Lord. And however you interpret this confession from the mouth of David, he obviously has done something that is wrong. He numbered the people. Was it for pride or conceit? Or was it that perhaps at a later time he might put his reliance upon numbers and not upon the Lord? You know, we could be tempted to do that today, couldn't we? You can think of occasions when there might be large companies gathered together for the preaching of the message of the gospel. And because of the largeness of the number, we might be depending upon that and forgetting that the power belongs exclusively to the Lord. Not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord. Not depending upon an outstanding preacher. Not depending upon a large number of Christians committed and involved. And all that's good. But relying solely upon God, the Holy Spirit. And so, we've briefly thought about one of David's sins. He knew he was wrong when he said, I want the people numbered. I want you to think with me briefly now about David's sorrow. David, you know, perhaps like some who are listening to me now, have passed through on numerous occasions sorrowful experiences. Maybe as you listen to me, you're saying, Mr. Rogers, I'm just passing through one at the moment. Let me say this to you. Earth hath no sorrow that heaven cannot heal. These are not my words. These are the words I learned a number of years ago, and they're embedded in my mind because I believe them to be true. No matter how great the sorrow that you experience on earth, heaven can heal it. If we don't believe that, then we don't believe really that your God is a God of all comfort and a merciful Father. But as we think about David's sorrow today, you notice the words as you read chapter 1 and chapter 3 and chapter 18. In chapter 1, he's lamenting over Saul and Jonathan. In chapter 3, he's lamenting over Abner. And in chapter 18, he's greatly moved for Absalom. Just think of these words. Lamented, greatly moved. As you listen to me at the moment, you may be saying what I said as I thought about it again this morning. I can understand that he should be lamenting as he thought about Jonathan. Can you understand that he should be lamenting as he thinks about Saul? Or as he thinks about Abner? Or that he should be greatly moved for an Absalom? My dear brother, my dear sister, let me say this to you. That makes David great, surely, in your thinking today. That even when there were people who hated him and would have smitten him, he tried to see things from another standpoint and did lament and was greatly moved at the passing of Saul and Abner and Absalom. Whenever you think about chapter number 1, and I'm sure you've read that chapter, you've thought about that tremendous lamentation from the lips of David. He commences his lamentation by saying things about both Saul and Jonathan. But then, as he proceeds in his lamentation, he begins to say things solely about Saul and things solely about Jonathan. I think that's quite interesting. Even in his lamentation, he wants to be saying things that are accurate, that are factual. Take time to read what he says about Saul and Jonathan. Take time what he says about Saul personally, individually, and what he says about Jonathan personally, individually. What you find is this. He does not attribute to them features that they did not display. And he does not exaggerate features that they did display. Now, I want us to think about that. Somebody has said, and it may be true, it may not be true, but somebody has said, that perhaps more untruths could be said at a graveyard than anywhere else. David did not indulge in anything like that. What David said about Jonathan was true about Jonathan. What David said about Saul was true about Saul. No exaggerations. No attributing to them features that they did not manifest when they were here living in this world. Maybe those of us who take part at funeral services could learn a lesson from David in this respect. Of course, let us speak highly of those who have gone, but let us always see to it that what we say is factual and true. It would be so easy, wouldn't it, to exaggerate, and it would be so easy in that respect to be wrong. When he comes to chapter number 3, he says about Abner, a great man, a prince and a great man, has fallen this day in Israel. Doesn't really say a great deal, does he? He's obviously tremendously moved. You know, it didn't really need to happen, Abner. You weren't bound. You were at liberty to move. But at the end of it all, you feel the tremendous sense of sorrow that David is feeling just at this moment, as he thinks about an Abner who has gone. Maybe some people would criticize David for how he responded when he heard of the death of Absalom. Somebody has said, in fact, he overgrieved for a son whom he overloved. I just want you to think about that for a moment. Maybe you don't share these sentiments today. Maybe you feel that even though he was a rebellious son,
and would have smitten his father, even the father who said, spare the lad. I think we've got to try and understand today the feelings of a father. For here is sorrow moving from the outside, and it's moving into David's home. That sometimes, does it not, makes it so different. Do you feel today that he's over grieved? Do you feel today that Absalom was overloved? Or can you understand today, as a parent, the feelings that were throbbing in this man's bosom over a rebellious boy? I'm sure there are Christians, if not listening to me now, but certainly believers somewhere, maybe in the town, certainly in the land, who would have the kind of feelings that David had for Absalom as they think about their boy or their girl. It's interesting, really, that he hasn't really very much to say, has he, about Abner or Absalom, and really very little to say on the passing of Absalom. Let me give you a quotation from the Talmud. This is what it says. The deeper the sorrow, the less tongue it has. Just think about that. It's true, you know. The deeper the sorrow, the less tongue it has. If there's somebody who seems to be constantly talking about the sorrow through which they're passing, maybe that's an indication that the sorrow is not just as deep as is being presented to us. Maybe you've gone to visit somebody and have passed through.